www.thebeatles.com.
Good morning and welcome to this edition of Shattering Myths. I am your host, Yada. If you wish to engage in this discussion with us this morning, and we're going to speak on many topics, it is 877-300-7645. Today is a special day on our calendar. It is Yom Kippurim. It is the day of reconciliations. It is the day that the covenant relationship with God, with Yahweh, is reconciled so that on the next step in our journey from man's troubled world to God's perfect home, we might enter it and camp out with him for all eternity. So today I'm going to cover brief snippets of the news, principally Iran's threats against Israel and Israel's response. Since it is Israel that is being reconciled with Yahweh on this final day, this is the day that Yahusha will return. This is the day that the long divorce between Yisrael, Yehudim, and Yahweh will finally end. So we will consider Ahmadinejad's threats to destroy Israel, to eliminate the nation and the people, and Israel's response prior to continuing our discussion of Yom Kippurim. What God said about this day, what it means to you and I. Now, one thought before we begin. There isn't one Christian on this planet, not one. Not amongst the 1.5 billion Christians on this planet, not one that observes Yom Kippurim. If they observed Yom Kippurim, they wouldn't be a Christian. So it's a statement of fact. It's not my opinion. It's not hyperbole. Statement of fact. There's not one Christian among the 1.5 billion Christians on this planet that observes Yom Kippurim. And that's a serious problem because God says if you fail to answer his invitation to appear before him on this day, you will not only be estranged from his family, which means that you will not be invited to live with him in heaven, but your soul will cease to exist. Now, to those 1.5 billion Christians, we can add about 15 million Jews. And you say, oh, well, it's the holiest day on the Jewish calendar. I'll talk to you a little bit about what the Jews do on this day, religious Jews, and how it's probably 1 in 100,000 of them, perhaps, that understand what this day means and how to capitalize upon God's generous offer, knowing what this party, this celebration of life and relationship is all about. Of the 1.5 billion Muslims on the planet, hopeless. So far removed from Yah's Torah testimony, his teaching, that there is literally no hope. For the Mormons, clueless. Socialist, secular humanists, not even interested. There are perhaps, at the very most, 1 in 1 million people alive today that have read, considered, and responded to Yahweh's invitation to attend Yom Kippurim. His home is not going to be a very crowded place. There's not going to be a lot of people in heaven. But on this day, as is the case with Pesach and Matzah, Passover and unleavened bread, if you ignore the invite, there is no chance whatsoever for you to come to know God as he is, form a relationship with him, be saved by him, or enjoy the benefits of eternal life. So this is rather serious stuff. Now, it's not serious in terms of depressing. There is nothing more uplifting than reconciling a loving relationship. All right, with that preamble, let's consider the news. Yesterday, Iran's president said on Wednesday that his country was under constant threat of military action from uncivilized Zionists, and called for a new world order not dominated by Western powers in the service of the devil. Now, it isn't unusual for people corrupted and poisoned by religion to be pure hypocrites, to have whatever they say be the opposite of what's true. The President of the United States is a classic example. Almost everything he says is the antithesis of the truth. It is almost always hypocritical. That's why I hate the campaign years where we have national elections, because you have to endure the commercials where both parties are just purely hypocritical in their statements. They are always guilty of the very things they assail their opponent. So it is not surprising that a man whose religion was conceived by the devil, a man whose Quran was inspired by the devil, a man whose prophet was possessed by the devil, to say that those who are not on his side are in the service of the devil. Now, how would that be, you wonder? How would the Quran, for example, speak harshly of the devil if Allah was Satan, if Allah is Satan? And the answer really is fairly simple. And it's all about this transition from knowing to understanding that we talked about yesterday. Those who know at least have begun the journey. At least they're along the path towards understanding. But those who understand are put in a position where they can look at almost any statement of consequence in the world and say, this is what this means. This is why this is being said. This is the consequence of the statement. This is the motivation of it. This is the inspiration for it. And it's not particularly difficult. I don't want to make it sound like it's difficult. It just has to be a priority. You have to want to invest the time to study Yah's Torah teaching and then compare it to the poisonous religious mandates of man, his political aspirations and his military aspirations, and it all makes sense. In this particular case, the reason that Allah can speak harshly against Satan is because Allah doesn't want to be seen as the adversary. That's what Satan means. He doesn't want to be worshipped as the adversary. He doesn't want to be known as Satan. He wants, and he is opposed to the adversary nomenclature. It is absolutely what you would come to expect Satan to do. To demean Satan, this adversary title. What does Satan want? He wants to be seen as God. He wants to be worshipped as God. That's what he wants. And so it is natural, it is expected for those who have been beguiled to believe that Allah, or the Lord, is God, that those who are actually worshiping Satan, but don't know it, have been beguiled into believing that Satan is God, to view that anyone who is allied with a different spirit other than the Lord and Allah is serving the devil. It is exactly how it was planned to be. This is the plot. It is Paul's plot. It was Muhammad's plot. And so the very nation that of all nations on the earth is most in lockstep as a Islamic theocracy with Hasatan, Halal bin Shakar, the devil, is accusing those who are not allied with the same spirit of working for the devil. It's the reason that religion is so disgusting, so poisonous. It's why God hates it so much. It turns everything upside down. Now, in this kind of an interesting tidbit here, in in Islam. That which is pure, that which is perfect, that which is godly, that which is nourishing. Most people don't know this that aren't Muslims, but then those who are Muslims don't understand it. But everything that is considered pure and godly and in service to Allah and nourishing in Islam is called halal. Muslims have to buy their food at halal stores. My friends, guess what Satan's name is? Halal. Now, he talks about the threat of military action from uncivilized Zionists. Well, let's just compare. Let's compare Israel in terms of the way the nation is run. It's prosperous. It has a rule of law. It has a wonderful mortality rate, wonderful healthcare system, is tremendously inventive. It is prosperous. There's freedom of movement. There's freedom of speech, access to education. I mean, if someone commits a crime, they're punished. There's accountability. But let's compare that to just across the border in Gaza. Chaos, unemployment, no educational opportunity, no opportunity for free speech, no opportunity for free movement. Take the entire Islamic world. Compare an Islamic country to Israel. You know, Israel reclaimed their birthright in 1948. Look at the difference. Israel at the time was as impoverished and as desolate as the rest of the Islamic world surrounding it. And lo, in these few years, these few decades, they've turned the desert into a paradise. They not only grow their own food, they invent, they prosper. It's an amazing transformation. And yet in the Islamic world, if a woman is raped, she's the one that goes to jail. An imam can plant burned Quran pages on a mentally handicapped child. And the child is the one that goes to prison for desecrating the Quran. Muslims in an uncivilized fashion riot and kill when somebody creates a silly movie. Who is uncivilized? Good morning. Welcome back to Shattering Myths. I am your host, Yada. Those who would like to challenge anything I'm saying or engage in this discussion, our number is 877-300-7645. There's another interesting comment in the opening statement that was made by Ahmadinejad. He talks about his country is constantly under threat of military action from these uncivilized Zionists. Let's think about that for a moment. After World War I and the Ottoman Empire was beaten not only by the Brits, but also by Muslim tribes, the Brits bribed the Muslims to participate in a war against fellow Muslims. And, you know, if you've seen the movie Lawrence of Arabia. And the Brits made promises that they would give them their own personal fiefdoms. But they had a far more solemn promise, and that was to Yehudim, to Jews, to Israel. And that is because a fellow named Chaim Weizmann actually saved Britain in that war. He invented two things related to synthetic acetone that enabled the Brits to manufacture rubber tires for their war vehicles. Once the embargo from Germany ceased, and the ability to make smokeless gunpowder, So those two things saved the British Empire from being destroyed by Germany before America intervened. And for that, he was promised a homeland for his people. The Brits reneged on that promise. The Holocaust would not have happened had the Brits not reneged on that promise. The Brits reneged on that promise, of course, because Muslim nations, being anti-Semitic, threatened Britain. And Britain didn't have a backbone. So we're in a situation where it took the Holocaust, finally, for Jews to get their homeland back. And when they did, was it Jews who said, you know, I think what we need to do is go attack all of the Arab nations? Let's go attack Iran. No. What happened was, the moment they got their homeland back, every Jew in Iran was forced to leave. Their property was stolen, they were threatened, and they were forced to leave. When Israel went into, the Jews returned to Israel, did they force the Arab Muslims living there to leave? No. They said, stay with us, be part of our country, you can have full citizenship. And that's exactly what they did. The opposite of the Muslims. Then, rather than threatening to fight the uncivilized Muslims surrounding the new state of Israel, they said, let's live in peace. And what happened? The Muslims attacked in unison. The Arab League said to the Arabs living in Israel, you need to leave so that the Islamic armies can slaughter Jews more easily and more freely. That's why they were exiled. They were not exiled by the Jews. They were exiled by fellow Muslims who attacked relentlessly. And it was only by the support of Yah that this new fledgling nation survived. It was then a matter of a decade or so later, and the Muslims all in unison decided that they would attack Israel and wipe off the face of the earth. They were braggadocious about it. They mounted all of their military mechanisms on the borders and almost prevailed. It was then just a less than a decade later that on this day, on Yom Kippurim, they in unison attacked again with vastly superior numbers and weaponry. And yet, because Yah has promised that this nation will remain, they prevailed over this surprise attack by uncivilized Muslims. And ever since that time, Muslims have found that since they can't beat Israel in a frontal military assault, even when they outnumber them 100-1, they've decided to terrorize them. So they created Fatah, the PLO, Hamas, Alaska Martyrs Brigade, and Hezbollah, arming them with rockets and weapons of all ilk, and they have sent uncivilized Muslims off as suicide bombers to kill them. They have been under constant siege of suicide attackers. And now, as we move through this Islamic reformation that has swept across the Middle East, Muslims are chanting once again, death to Israel. Death to Israel. And they are all united in wiping Jews off the face of the earth. So who is the one who is doing the threats? Mr. Hypocrite. And why did anyone listen to him? And why didn't everyone walk out of the United Nations arena? I am Yada. This is Shattering Myths. Hello, welcome back to Shattering Myths. I am your host, Yada. There's one last comment that I want to make on the first statement uttered by the man in the service to the devil, the uncivilized leader of the theocracy of Iran. He called his enemy uncivilized Zionists. Now, you may be of the belief that he used that term so that he did not appear to be overtly anti-Semitic and said uncivilized Jews like Hitler would have. And so maybe these Zionists are a special class of people who are just wrong-minded. Well, Zion is a scriptural term. It's a term that Yah uses. He calls the one of the mountains and Yisrael, Mount Zion. The word itself means signpost along the way. When you drive a car, you are a Zionist, or you're dead. In this particular case, you are either a Zionist, according to Yah. You read and pay attention to, you observe the signposts on the way from man's troubled world to eternal life in his home, or you're dead, just simply walking dead. Being a Zionist is rather important. There's also an interesting aspect of Zion that most people miss. The Z is from the Tazdeh, the Hebrew T, S sound. The I is from the Hebrew Yod, the first letter in Yah's name. The O is from the Hebrew Wah, the third letter in Yah's name. The Yod and the Wah are both vowels in ancient Hebrew. The very fact that we can pronounce Zionis tells us that we can pronounce Yah's name, and we know that it is Yahweh. Continuing with this statement, he said in his eighth and likely final address to the United Nations Assembly, annual gathering of world leaders, Mahmoud Ahmadinejad painted a gloomy picture of the world driven by greed rather than morality. Now, Muhammad, who is the lone spokesperson from Allah, he's the founder of the Islamic religion, his entire motivation was sex, power, and money. He was driven by greed. His wannabe God is driven by greed. Allahu Akbar is what that means. Allah is greater than Yahweh. The current, this is a quote, the current abysmal situation in the world and the bitter incidents of history are due mainly to the wrong management of the world and the self-proclaimed center of power who have entrusted themselves to the devil, Ahmadinejad said. Well, the abysmal situation in the world is a direct result of religion, politics, militarism, economic schemes. The very things we assailed in the first half of this program, they are universally the reason that the world is in such a bad shape. Doesn't matter the religion, doesn't matter the politics. They all blend together and they create a poisonous brew. If you wanted the single worst combination, though, of religion and politics, look to Iran. Doesn't get any worse than that. While all religions are bad and all political schemes counterproductive, there are worse examples, and the worst example on the earth today is Iran. It is the most immoral and disgusting place on earth. Iran's president did not reiterate his comments to journalists in New York on Monday that Israel has no roots in the Middle East and would be eliminated. I guess he was laughed at too much. Continued threat, this is a quote, by the uncivilized Zionists to resort to military action against our great nation is a clear example of this bitter reality. Why is it that Israel has threatened military action against Iran? Is it because Iran constantly threatens to destroy Israel and is now building a nuclear bomb to do so? On Wednesday, Netanyahu promised a tough response at the United Nations to Ahmadinejad's verbal attacks, which coincided with Yom Kippur, one of the most important holidays on the Jewish calendar. You know, one of the things that just makes my blood boil is when morons try to associate the things of Yahweh with religion and with race, as if Yom Kippurim, to use the scriptural term, was a Jewish event, as opposed to of Yahweh. That is the kind of ignorance that causes my blood to boil. And I want to tell you that 99.999% of the time that I tell people, hey, I'm observing Passover today, they say, oh, are you Jewish? What do you think, that God is of one race? That his Torah was written only to one group of people? No. The opposite of that is true. Yes, Scott?
Well, I was going to say that if it was confined to just one group of people or one race, wouldn't we all be the same color, the same race? Because we're made in his image.
Yeah.
So therefore, and that gets your blood going, because it not only is it ignorance, but it's ignorance that leads people away.
And correct. God said there's one Passover, one path for Yehudim and Gentile, Goyim. He said there is one Torah, one teaching, one book of guidance for Yehudim and Goyim. He said there was one covenant for both Yehudim and for Goyim. This idea that the Jews have their holidays and Christians have theirs is indeed of the devil. It is wrong. Now, that being the case, I have a bone to pick with Mr. Netanyahu. Everything he says from this point on is either errant or misguided. This is a quote from Netanyahu, a name, by the way, which means Yah's gift. On the day that we prayed to be inscribed in the Book of Life, the podium was given to the dictatorial regime in Iran that takes every opportunity to sentence us to death. There is no association with being inscribed in the Book of Life with Yom Kippurim. None. And there is no equation between mortal death on this earth and man causing others to die and the ultimate destruction of the soul. None. Rabbinical Judaism is as lost as is Christianity. There is this notion that somehow the Torah is of the Jewish religion. No, it isn't. What he is speaking of here comes out of the Talmud, not of the Torah. The Talmud is rabbinical arguments, not inspired testimony from God. Netanyahu continues, united in a goal of preventing Iran from achieving nuclear weaponry, he said in an open letter to Israelis before boarding a flight to New York. That's not really true. It's not even true in Israel, much less in the world. On Yom Kippur Eve, sacred to the Jewish people, this is a quote, and it should not be sacred to anyone, that's a religious term, and it should not be identified with the Jewish people. When it is misunderstood. The Iranian tyrant chose to call publicly for all of the world for us to vanish. It is a black day for those who chose to remain in the auditorium and hear these hateful words, Netanyahu added. Why do we speak of hateful words? Why don't we instead direct our words to truthful, rational, dishonest, irrational, so that maybe people would understand? There's nothing wrong with a hateful word. Yahweh uses them all the time, as should we. We should hate that which is merciless. We should hate lies. We should hate that which enslaves and beguiles and poisons, oppresses. There's nothing wrong with hateful words when they are properly directed. In my speech before the representatives of the United Nations at the UN General Assembly, they will hear our response. No, they won't. No, they won't. They are almost universally anti-Semitic. They won't hear it. They may sit in the audience, but they will be doing everything they can mentally to twist everything he says against him. As the Prime Minister of Israel, the state of the Jewish people, I am acting in every possible way so that Iran does not acquire a nuclear weapon. History proves that whoever wanted to erase us from the map failed in his mission, while the Jewish nation overcame all obstacles. That's not entirely true. When the Yehudim and Yisrael turned their backs on Yahweh, the Egyptians had their way with them. The Assyrians had their way with them. The Babylonians had their way with them. So did the Romans. So did the Greeks. Maybe you ought to read your history, too, out of Yah's testimony, Mr. Netanyahu. Now, then he says, we have created a marvelous state, and in some aspects it is marvelous. In others, it's as disjointed as a two-headed goonie bird. One of the most advanced in the world, that is true. Israel is a modern, strong state due to the strength and talent of its citizens and thanks to our belief in the justness of our path. I wish you a Gemar Chatima Tova. So what is a Gemar Chatima Tova that he speaks of for the Jewish nation? Is it somehow associated with Yahweh's presentation of Yom Kippurim? No, it isn't. This is why I say that when people mistakenly think that to be Torah observant is to be religious Jewishly, to be engaged in the Jewish religion, in Judaism, I tell them that that is nothing could be further from the truth. You see, Gemar is not a scriptural term. The root of the word from which it comes is not found, in the Torah, Prophet, and Psalms. It, however, is one of the most prominent words in the Talmud. Chatima is also Talmudic. It's not a scriptural term. Yah has a term for sealing and signing his signature, but this is the rabbinic version of it. And Tova isn't even the correct pronunciation of the scriptural word for good, because there is no V in scriptural Hebrew. The O sound comes from the wah, and it ends in a D. It is Toba. I am Yada. This is Shattering Myths. I am Yada. This is Shattering Myths. Welcome back to our program. The concluding statement by Benjamin Netanyahu is indeed troubling. It is universal, ubiquitous amongst religious Jews at this time, probably even secular Jews, Gemar Chatima Tova. As I shared with you, there is nothing in Yah's testimony regarding the Day of Reconciliations, Yom Kippurim, that has anything to do with the first two words, and the third word was mispronounced. Gemari is a Talmudic term. Chatima is also a Talmudic term, a term for signature and sealing. Now, there is a scriptural term for this, but they chose not to use it. And Gemar means to finish. There is also a scriptural term for finish, but they preferred the Talmud's, the rabbinic term, instead. As for Tova, there is no V in the scriptural Hebrew. None. The V was created as part of what's called the Sheba system. The Sheba system itself is a corruption of the Hebrew word Shoah. Scriptural word Shoah. Shoah means in Hebrew to corrupt. And the Sheba system is the one that change the pronunciations of the vowels, particularly the vowels in Yahweh's name, so that his name could not be pronounced. Tova is an example of that. It's T-W-B in scriptural Hebrew. How do you get Tova out of T-W-B? Now, this day, according to rabbinic Jews, in rabbinic Judaism is the only surviving form of the religion, Pharisaic Judaism, rabbinic Judaism, the only surviving form of the religion. It has beguiled Jews into believing that that God's year begins with Rosh Hashanah. Actually, God's year begins 14 days before Passover, the month of Aviv, but they instead accepted and embraced the Babylonian New Year, the pagan New Year, which started in the seventh month, in what we call September. And what they now teach beguile, indoctrinate Jews into believing is that these are days of repentance, which are divided into two parts. The first part begins with Rosh Hashanah and then finishes on Yom Kippur, where the final sealing of the fate takes place. You see, on Rosh Hashanah, it's the day that no one knows. It's the day that Satan is tricked into not knowing the time of that meeting, and therefore it's the day that no one knows the day or the hour. And it's the day where Jews can distract Satan so he doesn't accuse them of all the things that they have done wrong, so that once God is distracted and Satan is distracted, their names can finally be sealed in this book of life. A complete and utter corruption. It's just like the Christian corruptions of Christmas and Easter and Sunday. Same kind of thing. All Babylonian-based, all completely out of context with Yah's teaching. So it is that even the leader of Israel, beguiling his own people, misleading them, leading them astray. It is a very sad situation that is sadly, tragically, defining our world. Now, with this in mind, let's find out what Yom Kippurim actually means. And Scott, you had a point during the first mention of Yom Kippurim and this invitation, and where I said something fairly harshly, cut and dried, that if you don't answer this invitation that God has offered us to meet with Him on this day, your soul will cease to exist. And you wanted to take exception to that.
Yeah, I thought that was a really kind of bleak thing to where, you know, if you haven't accepted it by now, it's done. But it's an invite that He sends you every year. I mean, you get year after year, you get a chance. Eventually, that's going to, you know, you won't have the chance again. But until then, every year you get the same invite to the same party.
That is true. And to the degree that is true, and it is absolutely true that we get this invite to this party every year, I stand corrected. However, what I said is actually accurate. And we will consider why what Scott has just said is true, and what I said is true, and why they can both be true when they sound as if they are in conflict when we return, and consider this, the sixth of seven steps in our walk from man's world, from religion and politics, to being part of God's covenant family. I am Yada. This is Shattering Myths.
Hi, I'm Dr. Joel Wallach, the Dead Doctors Don't Lie guy. There's no reason why you shouldn't live to be at least 100 and have a great time getting there. And I'm going to give you a free copy.